Ja, gute Woche, grüß euch. Wir are in Chodesh Havavah Shara Bitochen. We'll be beginning Bezos Hashem Shara Bitochen Perek Revi'i, the fourth Perek.
On page
396. 396 in the English, Yosha Kreya. 396 in the English edition. We'll just, as we usually do, tie up what we saw last week. Now that we spent a long time on the discussion of Hishtablus. So, he tied up the discussion. Again, we're not going to go through the whole discussion right now about defining Hishtablus, the reasons for Hishtablus, where you draw the lines of Hishtablus, but he tied it up last week as follows. He said, first of all, you have to have the understanding that hishtadlus, material efforts toward gaining your needs. Sorry. Okay. The material efforts toward gaining your needs should be understood as a mitzvah. Hashem wants this system in place. It's not that it has to be this way, because otherwise, how will you get what you want? No, Hashem is capable of getting you what you need, and he has in mind what he wants you to have. But he says, I expect a certain participation on your part, and therefore, the mindset the Chavos HaVavos wants us to have is, go about it as a way of going through the motions. This is something that Hashem wants you to do. This is not what is determining your welfare in whatever realm it is. And your intent in doing that is, Hashem wants this, so I'm doing it. Hashem wants this, so I'm doing it. I'm doing a mitzvah by doing this. Hashem wants me to make those efforts toward my health. Hashem wants me to make those efforts toward my panasa. Hashem wants me to make those efforts toward building a family. Hashem wants me to make those efforts. I'm going to make those efforts. The results, I'm leaving up to him. That was A. And B, he said this will be a result of this, but part of the challenge of Hishtadlus is, are you capable of going about the Hishtadlus with the understanding that at the end of the day, it's not really in your hands, that you are going through motions? Can you maintain that realization and do the Hishtadlus? So Rabbi Avigdor Miller would bring this out. He said, imagine you have a farmer who spent months working his field, plowing and planting. And then finally, obviously, plowing takes a minute to say, but it doesn't take a minute to do. It's hours and days of sweating and exertion and exhaustion. And the planting, and then the cultivating, and then the reaping, and then processing the wheat. And then finally, he has his first loaf of bread coming out of the oven, which really is the culmination of months of effort. And it's a very good feeling. He has his first loaf of bread coming out of the oven. And then what's he supposed to say? He's supposed to say, Hamoitzi lechem min ha'aretz. Hashem brings bread out of the ground. It might be a little difficult if this person is thinking about what he's saying. I just put every fiber of my being into bringing that bread out of the ground. And now I step back and I say, oh, Hashem did that all. That's the challenge of bitachon. Yeah, to go about all those efforts with the understanding that I am cooperating with Hashem's plan. This is what Hashem wants me to be doing. How it's going to play out, I leave up to him. But this, he told us, that this is a challenge. But if you try to maintain that mindset when you're going about your shtadlus, when you're going to the doctor, when you're going about your parnasa, when you are going about your various family affairs, I am not taking care of my needs. I am doing a mitzvah. Hashem wants me to be doing this. I'm cooperating with his plan, and I'm letting him take care of me. So this was the the bottom line, as far as that goes. And then, he said, if you're really thinking this way, if at times you find that the efforts are not working out well, Then the thinking is, well, I'm doing my mitzvah and I'm going to get rewarded for it. And what the results are, I'm leaving up to Hashem. This is where the bitachon comes into play. Now we're going to move on to the next perek, but both in terms of tying up the previous perek and in terms of moving into the next perek, I want to recap the big seven, which I really have to be hanging here in the background the whole time. The big seven. What are the big seven? The big seven great premises, the seven great premises of bitachon, which he spelled out at length earlier. Bitachon is the realization of seven things. Number one is that Hashem loves you intensely. Right, that was number one. Number two is that Hashem is intensely focused on you 24/7. All the time. More focused than you are on yourself, because sometimes you go to sleep. Sometimes you get preoccupied and you're not busy thinking about your needs. You're involved in something. Hashem is intensely focused on you. That's number two. Number three is that Hashem knows better than you what is good for you. So if you put those three together, right, he loves you intensely, and everything that he's doing for you is guided by that love. And he knows better than you what's good for you. So whatever he's doing for you is the overriding decision of what's best for you. And that he's always focused. So it's never like, this is happening now. Maybe it's because Hashem was busy with something else. Right? That's number three. Number four is that Hashem can do whatever he wants. Meaning if Hashem decides that something is good for you, nothing can stop that from happening. So if anything that you want is not happening, it's not because it's not working out, but it's because Hashem, taking in the bigger picture, knows that that's not good for you right now. So that's number four, that Hashem can do whatever he wants. Number five is that no one else can get anything in edgewise. Because like the Chavis Olam has said, Hashem might be all-powerful and wants best for you and loves you, but if someone else can manage to get in the dark from the side, no, that also. Anything that happens is because Hashem said, this I want happening now because of the fact that I love you so much and I know what's best for you, etc. So that's number five. Number six is that when Hashem is busy mapping out your life, he's not operating in the here and now. Hashem is mapping out your life with a plan of from birth till, well, the way we would say it is 120, but really it's beyond that. But let's talk right now just in terms of 120 to keep it simpler. Hashem is doing things now. Whenever we're planning what's good for us and what's not good for us, all we can do is speak within our capacity is limited to the general range of the here and now. But Hashem is busy making cheshbonos based on events 30 years down the road. And even more than that, past 120. Way past 120, Hashem is busy taking into account when he is orchestrating the little details in your life. So that's point number six to keep in mind. And then point number seven of the big seven. Point number seven is the understanding that Hashem's chesed is unconditional. You don't have to earn it. You don't have to be worried about, well, am I actually earning it? We will qualify, because this is the point that the Chavis Olam has made. You can't be working against it. And if you're going to be working against Hashem's will, then you do have to be concerned that maybe the things that Hashem is planning for you will be reflective of that. But when you're not, when you are trying to cooperate with Hashem's will, you're trying to live a life of Hashem's will, you do not have to be making the cheshbon of, am I justifying all of Hashem's chesed? You live your life according to his will. You make sure that you're living your life the way he wants you to, and his chesed will be disproportionate to your efforts and will not be conditional on you earning them. Those are the big seven to keep in mind. I think the overall idea being Hashem is intensely focused on you with intense love, and knows and does what's absolutely best for you. Remembering that all the time. Question.
actually I've already covered this. When other people have free will and they can do whatever they want. So it wouldn't reach you if Hashem doesn't want it to reach you.
Oh, the good classic question. The good classic question. Was saying that Hashem is only planning what's best for you, but there's somebody else on the block who also has free will, and they decide they want to mess you up. They want to do something wrong to you. How does that factor in? So the general answer is, this is really something that warrants a longer discussion, but the general answer is that there are two systems going on at the same time. It will only affect you in a way that Hashem deems good for you, meaning many times a person can decide to try to do something for you, but it falls flat. They don't manage it. We see plenty of times that things don't work out. People make plans and they don't happen. What is it that decides whether the plan should happen or shouldn't happen? This is Hashem's plan of what he holds is good for you. Now, that person, let's say Hashem decides that someone should go through a certain aggravation. So there's no mitzvah to volunteer. If Hashem decided that my neighbor should go through certain aggravation, there's no mitzvah for me to be the one to volunteer. Hashem, I'll help you out with that. Right? You remember? I don't know if I don't know how it worked in your home, but do you remember the scene of the mother being angry at one of the children, one of the older siblings volunteering to mete out the punishment? Right? That never earns the mother's favor, right? So the this person is operating with their own free will, and they'll be held accountable for that. But if and how it should affect you, that is according to Hashem's decision. I'll add a point to that, which is a very beautiful a point here. This question is very central to this whole subject. This is a point that I heard from Israel Tauber. He said something very amazing. He said that at the end of the day, when you get into bed, you begin saying Kriya Shema Lamita. Well, whether you say it lying in bed, whether you say it sitting up near your bed, whatever it is, the last thing basically that you're doing in the day, once everything has already subsided, you're sitting down to say Kriya Shema Lamita. Kriya Shema Lamita is prefaced with a Ribbono Shel Olam, in which you state that I'm moichel anybody who wronged me in any way, right? It's the whole declaration. And that's followed by right? May it be your will that I not sin again. How do the two come together? I mean, there's two different things going on here. I'm being moichel anybody who may have done something to me, and I'm also asking Hashem that I should never do sins again, and Hashem should cleanse me of any of the averus I did chas v'shalom. How did the two come together? So Israel Tauber said something very, very beautiful. He said like this. He said, when you're in the course of the day and there's a lot going on, and people aggravate you or wrong you, you respond to the situation and you take it personally and you're resentful. He said, at the end of the day, when everything quiets down, and now it's quiet, and you're ready to go to sleep, and you remind yourself for a minute, no, there's nobody else on the scene right now. At the end of the day, it's me reconnecting with Hashem. And I tell myself, wait, it wasn't them. This was Hashem. I'm meeting back up with Hashem at the end of the day. And I have to remind myself that the events of the day were Hashem's doing. Anything that I experienced, anything that anybody did to me, was actually Hashem sending something my way through them. So at the end of the day, I say, oh, I get it, right. Hashem, it wasn't them, it was you. If so, hareini moichel, I'm capable of being moichel. And I'm acknowledging that this was between me and Hashem. It wasn't about that other person who decided to stick themselves in the middle. It wasn't about that person. It's about me and Hashem. Hashem, I'm acknowledging that. Therefore, I'm being moichel. And I'm also saying, perhaps it was an effect of my sins. So help me not sin anymore, and then I won't undergo such aggravation. That's how it comes together. If a person is capable, this is a very high madriga, it's a tall order. But as we've often said here in this year, we officially say things that are easier said than done, because we want to say them when they're easy, so that if we're put to the test, we should at least have it in our minds. But this mindset of being able to have somebody talking to me, doing something to me, but I'm sensing Hashem operating with me. This is a curveball that Hashem is sending my way. Hashem is communicating this with me. And the question is, it's not about this person. How am I responding to what Hashem is doing to me right now? That is one of the highest madrigas that a person could reach. And we'll add to that, you know the story of David HaMelech. David HaMelech is one of the most, for me to inadequately say, but one of the most inspiring figures that we have in our history. It's like endless. And in fact, Ravid Miller said that his is the name that appears most in Tanakh. I would have thought Moshe Rabbeinu. Ravid Miller said that actually the name that appears most in Tanakh is the name of David, more than 1,000 times. I didn't count it, but I'm saying this on the authority of Ravid Miller. And I'm going to resist getting onto that whole tangent because it's just a mind-boggling figure. Part of the awesomeness of the figure of David HaMelech is that he was a man who struggled for his greatness. That's why the whole story of David HaMelech is something that all of us can latch onto. But let's focus on one particular incident. And again, I'm going to try to resist the urge of just getting sucked into the whole story of David HaMelech. David HaMelech was very ambitious. And I'll start it from here. You know that Absalom, his son, rebelled against him. Right? At that point, Absalom's rebellion was basically successful. And David was being driven out of Yerushalayim with a small circle of loyal followers. Being driven out of Yerushalayim with a small circle of loyal followers. Now, it wasn't just that there was a rebellion. It was a lot more than that in terms of the demoralizing nature of this rebellion. First of all, it was his son. I guess as painful as it could get. But it was even more than that because the way it was being related to was David HaMelech sinned and therefore Hashem is rejecting him. This is another story of a person, a great person, who fell and was therefore being pushed off the scene and being replaced with somebody better, Absalom, right? Similar to patterns that we've seen throughout Tanakh. This is what David HaMelech was experiencing. And David HaMelech at the time didn't even know if he was going to be restored to the throne. And he was the first one to acknowledge, it's part of the beauty of the story of David HaMelech, he was the first one to acknowledge his guilt. So this was, we might say, the lowest point of his life. Being driven out of Yerushalayim in disgrace. Now, we have to realize, you know, we read the story, it takes only about a chapter and a half until he's back on the throne. But he didn't know that at the time, right? So, okay, not a big deal. This is, now it's the 2 minutes until you get to the part where he goes back to Yerushalayim. What's the big deal, right? But David, it's not where David HaMelech was then. David HaMelech was then at the lowest point in his life when he's being driven out of Yerushalayim in disgrace, with the perspective being, this is Hashem punishing him for his sins, and he's being rejected because of his averus. This was the attitude that was prevailing in much of Yerushalayim. Then what happens? He's on his way out, and you have Shimi ben Gera, right? Who now is the one who's going to pour the salt on the wounds. And throws rocks at David on his way out, rocks and dirt, he throws at him, and hurls some of the worst accusations at him. Mamish hitting him when he's down, when he's in his most painful, hurting point. This is what how Shimon ben Gera comes and piles this on. So Avishai ben Tsruya, one of David's loyal men, said to David, this person deserves to be killed, which was actually true. This person deserves to be killed. David still had a din of a king. And to relate that way to the king deserves being killed. And David HaMelech said, no, don't touch him. His words were, Ha'elekim omar lo yikalel. Hashem told him to curse. In other words, this is Hashem sending a message to me, and this is about me taking in that message. Leave him out of the picture. That was what happened there. What was the effect of that story? Okay, let's stop there for a moment. Now let's back up. David HaMelech was a man with very, very high aspirations and a man of unbelievable achievements. David HaMelech was the man who basically contrived the Beis HaMikdash. He's the one who created the eternal concept of Yerushalayim because of the what he breathed into it and what he envisioned. Yerushalayim is an Ir Hashem, as a center of the highest standards and ideals of Ruchnius. This was all David HaMelech's making. David HaMelech provided us with Tehillim. And David HaMelech provided us with the golden example of David HaMelech. David HaMelech brought Klal Yisrael to a states of prosperity and Hatzlocha and Ruchnius and Gashmius that were unprecedented. And David HaMelech says to Hashem, he's a very ambitious, he says, Hashem is known as Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, and Elokei Yaakov. That's how he's identified. I want it to be that for all of eternity, you should also be identified as Elokei David. That's a person coming and saying today, I want to be up there among the three of us. You know, keep yourself in perspective. You're not that generation. You're much later in time. So Hashem says to him, well, you know, okay, we won't go through the whole process now. With all of David HaMelech's achievements, you know what David HaMelech is told afterwards? It was at that moment, after all of his glorious achievements, it was at that moment that he was actually catapulted to that level. That was when he became, at that moment, when he was in the lowest point of his career, his life, and he didn't even know if he was going to be brought back to Yerushalayim, it was at that moment that he became the regular Revi in the Merkava. I don't know exactly what that means. He became the fourth wheel in the heavenly chariot, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and David. That was when he became embedded. He reached the highest place. This was considered the highest personal achievement of David HaMelech's life when he responded that way. That was when he actually achieved what he was hoping for, to become, that Hashem should be known as Elokei David. So this gives us a little bit of an idea of the immense madrega of a person who is able to take hurt and offense and simply take it as, this is not about that person. This is Hashem and me. Like I said, it's a very tall order, but this is from the highest madregas that exist. Question.
Okay, so, that's David HaMelech, but let's say that the person who's in an abusive relationship, you have a boss, for example, that just yells at you, they're not mentally stable, they treat you like garbage. Are you supposed to say, well, Hashem thinks I'm a piece of garbage? Or are you supposed to say, I'm supposed to get out of this relationship, I'm supposed to quit this job?
Oh, okay. So we're taking the question to the next level. So do we carry the banner of turn the other cheek, right? A person hit your right cheek, stick out the left cheek. This is good, right? Okay, right. So Lemaisa, this is also something that deserves length. Let's see if we can do it short. I don't have a very good track record with that. But we're gonna draw a fine line between protecting yourself and the way you relate to it on the emotional level. Meaning, if someone is being abusive, if someone is wronging you, we do not say, well, just take it all in. No. Take the steps to protect yourself. But, and here again, this is a tall order. The question is, can you do it without the personal edge? Meaning, I'm figuring out technically. I'm not just slamming back because this person is slamming me, but I'm figuring out, no, I'm not going to slam back. But I'm going to figure out what are the steps I need to take. What are the steps I need to take to protect myself? What does halacha warrant in this case? Sometimes those will be unpleasant steps, but I'm not doing them in just a fury of personal response. It's, I have to figure out now, what is the Ratzon Hashem? Hashem does not want me to just allow myself to be dragged through the mud. And therefore, I'm going to figure out Al Pi Torah, which often involves get an external perspective on things. Don't figure it out yourself because you're caught up in it. What are the steps I have to be taken to protect myself? What are the steps I have to be taken to move out of this situation, but at the same time, to keep it impersonal? This is there's later in the Chavis HaVavis. The Chavis HaVavis says, he describes what he calls the Parush. Parush is what we would call, in our language, we'd call that the tzaddik. Okay, but this is later in the Sefer. He has a long, flowery description of the Parush, and there are a couple of very striking phrases there. One of them is, Machloktoy mi ima uchuvosoy nichbedes. I'll put it into just straight English. He's a pleasant enemy. Meaning, there's so much to that. In a dispute, he might not make himself a doormat. He might take the steps he needs to take. But he is not going to allow it to turn into, you know, the air will be filled with these personal, the personal angle is going to remain one-sided. He's going to do what he needs to do, but he's going to continue relating pleasantly. And sometimes doing what you need to do can be forceful things, but they are guided by halacha, guided by a technical sense of what do I need to do to protect myself, not by a personal vendetta of this guy slamming me, I'm just going to slam back. Not easy at all. Not easy at all. But that's the mice of the answer to the question. We're drawing a very fine distinction between, yes, there's such a thing called Beis Din. There's such a thing called how, you know, that where halacha gives you the things that you should be doing to protect yourself. We don't believe in just letting people run us to the ground. But at the same time, the ability, not pashut, this is not pashut, to be able to keep out of it completely on the personal level. Take certain measures. Often, that itself contributes to things starting to blow over. And yes, many times it will mean, like the example that you gave, a person with an abusive boss, leave, right? Yes, many times that will be what needs to happen. So no, it's not about turning the other cheek. But it is about keeping the personal edge out of it. And this, like we said before, it's not easy, but this is really what brings a person to one of the greatest heights that's available to us. There was an incident, to bring home the point in a bit of a different way. There was an incident with Rabbi Avigdor Miller took a very strong public stand on something, which he was known to do. And somebody was very upset by it. Actually, a certain reform rabbi or something like that. And he contacted Rabbi Miller with certain personal threats. He sent very threatening messages. So Rabbi Avigdor Miller hired a private investigator to dig up dirt on the person. Then he informed this person, he said, this is the information that I have about you. You decide whether you want me putting it out or not. Okay, all I'm saying there is that, no, it's not a mitzvah to say, oh, you're threatening me? Here, I'm gonna leave my door unlocked. You take the steps that you need to take. But I'll wrap, what's that?
It's just so hard because that's a message from Hashem, like this person giving you your threats or whatever it is. It's so hard to interpret. So what's the message supposed to mean? Why is he threatening me? Why is he saying terrible things about me? Like, why would Hashem put that person to be that mouthpiece to voice those words?
Oh, so now you're asking, okay, so is it a message from Hashem or is it not a message from Hashem? If it's a message from Hashem, take it.
What?
What's that?
So let's try
to put it, bring it together with the following example. This is something I think might be easier to put this together if we talk about a different form of Yisur. And then see if we can extrapolate that, apply it to interpersonal Yisur. But let's take the example of, and this is something we've discussed. Let's take the example of a toothache. Okay, because it's easier, it's just a less personal, there's less emotion involved. It's a very physical, straightforward sort of ordeal, right? You can't be mad at anybody. I mean, you might, when a person has a toothache, they might be mad at everybody around them. But let's use that as an example, and then we'll see how we can apply that to interpersonal things also. A person has a toothache. On the one hand, we say it's a message from Hashem. So now, it's a message from Hashem, We're not going to get into, we talked other times, what do you do with that message? We're not going to get into that now. Just the very fact that, yes, this is something that Hashem expects you to relate to in a certain way. He expects you to accept it, right? So now, should I not take a painkiller? Because it's a message from Hashem and Hashem expects me to accept it. So where did the painkiller come in? The answer is that certainly you should take a painkiller. But doesn't that contradict accepting it? How can I take a painkiller and accept it at the same time? Do the two work together? So we've discussed this. And it's right there, a fine line, but this is really the understanding behind what we're talking about also. Take a painkiller and accept it at the same time. How does that work? What that means is the following. Yes, if you are going through some sort of suffering on any level, Hashem enables you and wants you to find the means of alleviating it. But in the interim, before you get to the shelf with the painkiller, you're going to be suffering, right? After you take the painkiller, it'll take 20 minutes, half hour to kick in. You're going to be suffering then too. And the painkiller, perhaps it'll work to a certain extent, perhaps it won't. So what you're supposed to do in that case is take the painkiller and say, Hashem, on the one hand, I'm alleviating it, but whatever I do have to go through, I'm embracing. Okay? In the case of the painkiller, that works. Because there also it gets confusing. People say, one minute, acceptance or alleviation? Is it to our conflict? No, you alleviate. And Hashem's plan is, you do what you can to alleviate it. Whatever you're meant to go through, you'll go through anyways. Can you accept that while you're trying to alleviate it? Okay, everybody with me on that? This is a fine point, but I think it's clear enough, right? We have acceptance and efforts to stave it off going on at the same time. Okay? So now let's take that and apply it to the interpersonal thing also. Here, it's a little more difficult because there's that personal edge in the air. The question is, am I capable of saying, whatever hurt is coming my way, Hashem wants me to appreciate it as a message from Him. At the same time, I'm meant to be taking a painkiller on the interpersonal level, doing what I can to alleviate it. But what I do experience, I accept as Ratzon Hashem. Obviously, there's more to elaborate, but at least on the very basic level, does that answer the question to an extent? Maybe. Well, I can live with that. Okay.
The pain you will get, but the question is whether that person's words you should take is true or not.
No, not as true.
No.
A person hurting you is another form of Yisurim in Hashemayim. I'm relating to the pain. The words, if they're true, they're true. If they're not, they're not. You know that, right? If they're true, then even if they're coming in a hurtful way, you might want to say, there's something to this, right? Also not so easy. But that's not what we're talking about here. We don't mean to say that this person's bad meanness is Hashem's formulation to you. We mean to say that what you're experiencing, the aggravation that you're experiencing, that you take as a message from Hashem. The Chavis HaVavis tells us later that he says, I'll bring this home with another example from the Victor Miller. I know this is getting ubiquitous, but you're coming with that understanding. He was one time giving over a certain message in the share that somebody found not pleasing to his ears, to say the least. And one of them wanted to share him. Somebody stood up and said, Rabbi, drop dead. So he looked up at him with equanimity and said, that'll be the last thing I'll do. Responded with that equanimity, completely detached. And the truth is, it's very interesting because he responded the same way to compliments. There was always like this certain detached, impersonal, like my ASIC is between me and Hashem. People are like a very technical piece of things. I also saw a compliment. He responded also in a very kind of like impersonal, detached kind of way. Mamish, some of us talks about that later, the Midas Hishtavus, how compliments and insults both hit him in the same way. It's kind of like a certain detached, impersonal, no. Right? The Chavis HaLavis describes later, Vaita, when he's talking about his parush, that's the Chavis HaLavis' word for a tzaddik. We say tzaddik, he used the word parush. He talks about how somebody did something very demeaning to him. And he talks about how the Parush, on the one hand, like wasn't moved by it at all. While on the other hand, he was, meaning on the personal level, like he took it in a detached kind of way. While at the same time, it says like he just thought to himself, wow, it's pretty amazing that a person could actually do something like that. But kind of like almost as though he was watching it from the side. So yeah, a person's choice of words is their bechira. A person's choice of words is their bechira. What I'm going through and the way it impacts me, the aggravation, the pain, that is something that Hashem is sending my way. And in terms of that, I'm gonna tune this person out and relate to Hashem. Now, you might not have the greatest opinion of this person after that. That makes sense, right? But it's a fine line between that and letting it really turn into a personal vendetta. Now, weiter, would I be able to do this? I don't know. We're discussing this and learning this in order to set ourselves a certain standard to aim for. And it's high. It's high. But this is the idea. Okay. Now we'll start our shiur. Okay. And don't worry, I'm keeping track of the time. Let's just introduce the next parak. Next parak is a fascinating discussion. It starts breaking down how you apply bitachon to all the various areas of life. Because as I kept saying the whole time, we kept using parnasa to illustrate the examples. Well, it's really one very limited specific realm of life. So what he's going to do now is, you know, I'll just talk this out baal peh right now. And the Be'ezus Hashem will really see the discussion later next week. He says that bitachon, he's going to break it down to seven areas of life. One is your very personal as in life, death, health, your body, physical pain, okay? That's category number one, and that has one approach. Then there's parnasa and possessions. That's category number two. That has its approach. Then we have category number three. And this, we'll just, to bring it all together into one term, we'll call it bitachon in relationships. Family, friends, associates, business, standing in society. We're going to bunch that all together just into one general category called bitachon in relationships. That has its approach. Number four is mitzvahs. Bitachon when it comes to mitzvahs. This is a very delicate area, as he's going to express. And here, he breaks this down further. Bitachon when it comes to mitzvahs that are only about me personally, let's say davening, right? Doesn't involve anybody else. There's one way of bitachon, meaning I do my efforts and I hope for Hashem, hope to succeed. That's one realm. Completely personal mitzvahs, davening, things like that. Taking a lulav on Sukkot, right? And then number five is mitzvahs that interpersonal mitzvahs that involve other people, which also you do yours. And then how do we apply bitachon there? Mitzvahs like chesed, teaching, instructing people the right thing, tzedakah. These are mitzvahs that involve other people. That's category number five. Category number six of bitachon is bitachon when it comes to the reward you're going to get, the ilam haba you're going to get for the mitzvahs you do. As another area of bitachon, having that full faith that it's there. And number seven, and this is perhaps the most abstract, is bitachon in the ilam haba that Hashem gives just because of his favor for you. Nothing to do with the particulars of your performance. These are seven areas which each have the basics of bitachon are what we already discussed. But they're going to play out in different ways in each of these seven areas. And this will, Be'ezus Hashem, be the subject of next week. Yeah, good to vote.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. A good
Thank you. A good